I mean, it is like the thing. Like anything you want to do, anything you want to create, anything you want to become, you are not going to do it on your own. Like it is going to require partners. It's going to require customers, subscribers, or, you know, people. Like it's all going to require people. Like the number one skill set, like I think that's going to apply to everyone, is being able to connect.
Kyle, I really want to thank you because, you know, you get on airplanes and you don't know who exactly you're going to sit next to, how exactly that's going to impact your life. And I have to say, you are the person I've sat next to on an airplane who has impacted me the most. And it was a random run-in in October 2022. I want to set the scene for the audience and someone listening. It's like, I get on this plane from New York City to Austin, Texas, and I'm sitting in the middle seat, which I rarely do, and you're sitting on an aisle seat. You're reading Think and Grow Rich.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere in the middle of that—
Do you remember, was I in a sleeveless shirt?
You had to be in a sleeveless shirt.
I was in the uniform?
You had to be. I mean, there's no way you were wearing anything but that.
It's all I own, so.
And so— we just start talking. Do you know how we started talking?
Well, it was about the book.
Thinking Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill.
Yeah. And I remember you sitting next to me and like thinking, okay, here's like this young kid about my like stature. I wonder what he's like doing. I wonder if he's like training. Cause I always think of like people, like what they're doing in their fitness and what they're doing in their gyms. I wonder if he's going to like ask me anything. I'll be like, you know, it's like ready. But you hope to meet somebody on a plane the way that we did and actually talk like the way that we did for a whole flight.
Yeah. We had a 2-hour podcast on the plane that should have been recorded.
I gave you my whole life story.
There were so many stories in there that some are like, I wish that we could bring to the podcast. Maybe we will. And I was amazed at how just charismatic you were, how able to be present. And I was like, this is a person that I'd love in my life. And we exited that plane and we exchanged contact information. And then I ended up moving to Austin 3 months later. I come to the gym, first day in Austin. And who do I see? But the same guy that I saw next to on the plane or sat next to. I'm like, wow, that is amazing how that works.
The universe wanted us to be connected.
Yeah. And
for sure.
And so to give someone listening context, we have ran into each other at the gym maybe like twice a week for the last year at least. And it just, you just want
to— you're top 10 people like in my life in the frequency that I see, the quality of the interaction, the closeness I feel, how much I know about you, how comfortable I am with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you meet somebody like that, you know very quickly. And you can't get away from them. Yeah. Like it pulls you, there's a gravity that you just like pull in towards each other, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just, we're in that season, man. But I think we're doing good work.
We are.
I get a lot out of our conversations. Every time I see you, I feel like I can bring up like something I just read or something I just heard about. I have there's a level of trust and a vulnerability that I can have with you that's like, it's unique, man. It's different. I can tell like that you're well-trained in the art of linguistics and communication and conversation.
It's a lot of episodes.
Yeah, man. You've been doing a great job.
Thank you.
So what, like who's listening to this podcast? Who are the viewers?
Yeah, I think, and this is, it's funny you asked that because I was thinking about how to frame this.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's a lot of men in their 20s and 30s who see the path that the world maybe wanted them to go down or their parents wanted them to go down and are asking themselves or thinking to themselves, this isn't right.
Yeah.
Something about this doesn't sit well.
Yeah.
And I know you've gone down that road before and went down a different road that has brought more fulfillment and joy.
It really resonates with me.
So,
yeah, because I felt like, to give a brief overview, I lived a very like straight life growing up. And like in the way that there wasn't a lot of deviation. I mean, straight in the sense that like, it always seemed like there was a very clear sidewalk that I was walking down. There was no choices. There was no like deviation. Football was a big part of my life, and it was such a big part of my life, and it consumes so much of your life, and it's so physically demanding. It's so mentally demanding, emotionally demanding. There's not a lot of room for anything else. So if you continue on, and I played through college, and right until you finish, like that's everything. It's like your whole identity. So there's not a lot of room for exploration or, you know, considering what other routes or ways I could go about life. You don't even have the option, right? So after football, I guess I had a degree in finance. I barely remember it, right? I got a job in a bank. I was, good with people. I could like pal around. You know, I knew how to behave in a locker room and amongst in a team.
You were a quarterback at Bucknell.
I was a quarterback at Bucknell.
To give context.
Yeah. And I was always very good at like fitting in a team. I was good at making friends, building trust, being someone that you could rely on. So I got a job at a bank. I opened checking, savings accounts, credit cards, 401ks, like bank products. And that sucked. I liked talking to people, but like I had to wear a tie every day. I had to do things the way that they wanted me to do. Whenever we would close mortgages, there was a lawyer that would come in and had to be present to close the mortgage process, right? And read off all of the information to the people signing the documents that they understood what they're doing. And I knew he made a lot more money than me because he had like the very first iPhone, wow. like when it first came out, and it was like, $1,000 or whatever. And like, no one had ever thought of like paying that much for a phone, and he had one, and I'm like, oh man, that's awesome. I should be a lawyer.
So this was like 2005 to 2000.
This was, yeah, I graduated 2006. So this was like 2006, 2007, maybe 2008. And this was 2005, 2006. Cause I started law school in 2007. Because of this guy, I just studied for the LSAT.
Wait, so you see this guy's iPhone.
His iPhone.
And you're like, and do you see his checking account and all that stuff?
No,
as well?
That would have been a good idea. But like, no, I didn't even look that up. I just knew that like, that at that point, like that was such a sign of like wealth.
Yeah.
Because you just have like this extra money to spend on this like brand new thing. Nobody knew what an iPhone was.
Yeah.
Or like the value. It was like, it'd be like somebody with the Vision right now.
Yes.
That, like, it wasn't given to them. They went and bought it. Like, right. It means you have like discretionary income on silly things. Like maybe it's cool, but like you got money. Like if you're buying the Vision right now, what's it like $5,000?
I think so.
Yeah. Like you got to have $5,000 just like sitting around.
Right.
So that's what I thought. Anyway, that was what I told myself. Right. So this guy definitely makes more money than me. I should probably be doing that. I can just like still work at a bank and like close, go to these closings. And like, I guess he wasn't doing very much. So I took the LSAT. I did good enough. I didn't really like study that hard, but I did good enough to get into West Virginia University, I was in West Virginia. So that was an in-state law school. It was more affordable that way. And I loved it. I was in law school at West Virginia. It was so much fun. I wasn't playing football. I, partied. I like really socialized. I started a spray tan company. I lived it up like through law school. And it was like in the tail end of law school that I realized like, this whole like kind of path, like I've been exploring, but this whole path that I've been on, like wearing ties and suits and like banker, lawyer, something, this is not this is not what I want to do. There's a lot of options of things that you can do. Like, I mean, you're a great example. Like you can be a, you can have your own podcast. Like you could move to India. You could like, you could reenact civil war fights. You could like, there's so many different things that a human can do. And literally my mind was shut off to like all but like the banker, lawyer, businessman, clear, like the stuff you see in the movies, the jobs that people have where they wear ties and suits to work. And I was limited to that path. Yeah. And like in that feeling, like, so like going back to where this all started, that feeling of like, this isn't right. I don't feel right. Like, I don't feel right with this suit, or I don't feel right with this tie around my neck. I don't feel right. Like someone else telling me like how I have to like do this. This isn't for me, but not feeling like there's any alternatives.
So you felt like there was a different path for you, or that you didn't feel comfortable with the path you were on, but you didn't know that there was a different path.
I didn't feel comfortable with the path I was on. I didn't even know there was another option.
Until how much later?
Well, it was until LSD.
Wow.
Yeah. It was until LSD. And that was at the very like tail end of law school.
Wow.
And that was the first experience of my life that I even knew, like could see that there were other options out there.
What came up? I mean, like there's 10 years there
that
I want, like, is that 10 years between you realizing that law isn't for you and then you actually changing?
No, I mean, there was 10 minutes between realizing that law wasn't for me and then changing. Oh, no, there was probably like, I was going down. I love football. So I'm very appreciative for like that in my life. Mm-hmm. I think like as a young man, too many options are not good. Like, I think that served me really well. I needed that rigidity, that structure, like growing up through my adolescence and like surging testosterone and just like young men are like the scariest people on the planet. You know, they need like to be controlled, and football was a good way for me to like stay focused, stay in control, stay accountable. But then when I didn't have that, I kind of still had that mindset of like, there are no options except for the option that I am like currently on.
I see.
And that didn't feel right. Football felt right. Like playing felt right. But this course of like doing what you do after football, what I saw my teammates doing, the guys come before me, that didn't feel right. And I didn't know what to do about that or to think about that. It did not feel like it was even an option to not do it. It just felt like you're trained to suck it up,
right?
And like put your head down and like keep moving forward, take another step. Life is painful. You know, what are you complaining about? Like you don't complain. You just go.
So you took that into banking and then you took that into law.
I just continued stepping forward, but without thinking. And now I'm like, I'm on a new path. I didn't realize that like there was any other path, but I'm on a path now and I don't like how it feels. And I take LSD and now I see all the other paths for the first time. I see the 10,000 different paths. And one of those paths was Arnold Schwarzenegger. Like that was appealing to me. Like this guy came from Austria to America with like $10 and built up a career, platforms, movie stardom, politics, global influencer with a thick Austrian accent. Not particularly like that smart, you know, but he got the whole world to pay attention to him. You know, and he did it through his body, through his physical form. And I was like, that is something I have control over. Like, I know my way around the weight room. Like, I can do things in the gym. Like, if I buckled up and dialed this in, I could get people's attention too. And I was like, that would give me a platform. That would set me apart. That would give me something that I could like, I could build on. And after that experience, I just went right to bodybuilding.com forums, typed everything I could, searched everything that I could on nutrition and like bodybuilding diets. A lot of like Lane Norton was all over it back then, dude. He was on top of everything. So I read a lot on macros and like measured every grain of rice. I like went to the gym at 4:30 every morning just to get enough fasted cardio in early in the day. I would stay up later just because I knew like being awake burned more calories. I was very extreme. There's nothing healthy about what I did, but it was extremely powerful in showing me that when you go all in on something for a short period of time, you can dramatically change your life and move the needle. You can put yourself on a whole different path that you were not on before. And I did in 3 months. And you know, that led me to moving to New York, fitness modeling, getting into training, opening gyms, being my version of Arnold Schwarzenegger. I took acting lessons.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, like a completely different course and path.
And so what was it like then in your law firm or when you're working? What is that like when you're in that position of changing and you're not in the new reality that you've envisioned for yourself? What was that stage like?
They have a word for it now. It's quiet quitting. Mm. It's you're just bad at your job. Yeah, I mean, you have to be engaged and present in what you're doing, or you're gonna not be good at it. You might be like barely good enough that you don't get fired, you know. But like that's where I was at. Like I was not into what I was doing. So it was really like looking at what is the bare minimum that like I'm not going to get fired. How do I like hit that mark?
Wow.
And that's what was so miserable about the trajectory. It's like, I'm just getting started and this is how it feels, right? Like this is the beginnings of being a lawyer.
How long were you a lawyer for?
So I wasn't ever like a practicing attorney. During the summers in law school, you would work as a lawyer. And I like did that, and they pay you like you're a lawyer, and they have you do work like a lawyer, and you experience what it is to be a lawyer. And that those two summers was enough for me to know like this is absolutely not right for me. Like this is a path that like is going to end badly for me if I stay on it.
So it's banking, law, and flirting with those two ideas. And then you're like, I need to be Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. Well, that's like those two ideas were all kind of like part of the same imaginary path, right?
Exactly.
Like it was jobs that you wear a tie for, you know? And that was the path that I was on. Follow the script, do the job, apply for this, listen to your boss, like no creativity. No, like, what do I want? What do I want for my life? What do I want my days to be like? Those questions were never asked by me. I didn't know you could ask those questions, you know? And that experience of like opening my mind up and just seeing that, of course they are. Look around. Look at all the people around you that are doing amazing things. You can do any of them. Like any of them are possible, and it's not going to be that hard. It's just going to take like conviction and you just have to be all in on that for a period, enough of a period of time to like get you on the path.
Yeah.
You don't have to be all in all the time, but you absolutely do to like move the needle.
And in the beginning,
you gotta be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like once you have momentum, you're like doing actions like on that path that are like serving the goal, and you don't have to be like all in anymore. You know, you can take a breather, but that big shift, I think that's the thing that's the most daunting. It's probably the thing that like, you know, that keeps people from doing it, but it's also just the belief that it's possible for you to be a different person than you are right now. That is 100% possible in a really short period of time. And all options are open. If anybody is doing it, you can do it.
Yeah. And so what got you to take the LSD in the first place?
somebody dosed me. Yeah, somebody just gave it to me. It was like at the end of a night of partying.
Wow.
I honestly can't even tell you if I took it, like if I was aware that I took it or not. I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure, but I sat on my front porch for 12 hours from like 6 a.m. till 6 p.m. and I watched the leaves fall and I watched all of the futures that could be in my life.
Yeah.
And really like just went through it like a Rolodex, deciphering and kind of picking what I wanted to do.
It's so interesting how we close off so many of those options and so many of those leaves because someone we respect told us that it's not possible or that we can't, and we believe them.
I really wonder if like, if I closed off those options or if they were never open, like that they were never options. That's really how I experienced that LSD experience was like, the world opened up. Like I didn't know the other options were actually possible. I didn't close them off.
Right.
They weren't there.
Right.
Like my right. world actually expanded.
Yeah.
For me, like in the way that I viewed everything, it wasn't like a repression. It wasn't like blinders. It was like, don't look this way.
Right.
It was like, the end of the universe is right here. You know, there wasn't the option.
Yeah.
I mean, I think for a lot of people that's a good place to start. Not the LSD, but like being able to look around the world. Because if I could have just done that, if I could have looked at all of the people of the world, like, and thought all of that is possible. Anything is possible, and believed it. That could have helped get me there.
Yeah, and I think people who are listening to this podcast are on that path in some way.
I think so, right?
Because they know what a podcast is. They've experienced it. They know that different people have different life experiences. So, what happened when you actually manifest this vision of 3 months of working out, and you go to New York? And yeah. you go to the modeling agency.
Yeah. Well, I got in sick shape first. That was the like step one. Cause I knew that if it wasn't really recognizable, if people couldn't like see me from across the block and be like, whoa, like it wasn't gonna work. It had to really stand out.
Do you have pictures?
Yeah,
that we could flash on the screen, video.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Put the photo here.
Pull these up. But yeah, this is before and after 3 months.
Okay.
And it was intense. It was very like noticeable. And I had some photos taken by my barber. So the guy who cut my hair took photos. We sent them to agencies in New York. We sent them to booking agents in Pittsburgh. And I didn't hear anything back from New York, but I did get jobs in Pittsburgh for GNC and Dick's Sports. And the bookers there, they introduced me to agencies in New York.
Wow.
So like it was that connection that then I went up for a week, and that visit that was supposed to last a week, I just stayed. So like I went up, they sent me on jobs. I went into Wilhelmina's modeling office. They sent me on a few jobs to like see if it would work out. I got booked for jobs. They were like, cool, we'll sign you. But you have to stay now. So I stayed on my buddy's couch until I could get an apartment. I was there for 13 years.
And you're at this point living the dream, or feeling like you're living the dream of like—
The dream changes, but yeah.
I was a lawyer, or I was going to be a lawyer, and now I'm like a model and I'm enjoying being a model. Like you were enjoying the day to day.
Oh man, it was awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't familiar with New York really at all. I think I visited once when I was 18, but I did not really appreciate like what it was and what could happen to you if you stayed in it, and the access that you would get like to people and the energy that you would get and the, like the belief that you can do everything. You have this like incredible wind behind your sails in New York that like anything is possible. So like the floodgates were open for me. I was going to be Arnold. Like I was going to be a movie star. I was going to be governor. I was going to do whenever I wanted. And, I was loving it. Yeah. I was like going to auditions, like taking acting classes, like training these celebrities. Like I was around these people. Like I was around all this, this stuff that was like happening, like these movies being made, like these photo shoots that were happening. Like I was rubbing elbows with all the people like making these big moves and doing all these things. And I felt like I was part of it. I was completely in a different place than I was when I was, you know, on that straight and narrow banker lawyer, wear a tie, suck your soul out, like, and just, you know, sell it. It was completely different.
And at what point did you realize, oh, I really did do this? Or I really noticed a change. When did that happen exactly?
When did I like notice the change from before?
Yeah.
Man, I didn't look back. I was just all forward. Everything was forward. There wasn't any like moment, because New York doesn't chill.
Yeah.
Like New York requires you to like continue going. And, you know, I moved there with like all the hope, all the ambition, and it and the energy and the power like pushes you forward, and it keeps like pushing you toward like what you're good at, what you want. It gives you access and opportunities. And but like over, after enough time, like you settle into things differently. And that's like what got me into the training. Like I really enjoyed that, like that part of it. That was like a really tiny part of it at first, and really tiny part of like what I think got me there. The training was just like a tool that made me look a certain way so that doors would open, right? But then after enough time, I realized, man, it was this tool that like completely changed my life. This like gave me, this opened the door. This gave me like the power, the dominion over my body. And like, I could do what I wanted with it. And when I could change who I am. I could literally like mold myself. And by molding my physical body, it changes like my mind and what I believe for myself. It's like, this is what people need. This is what they want. Like, how do I, like, this is the calling. Like, how do I translate this? How do I give people this? It was never like to be the movie star, or like to be Arnold. Like that became clear. Like it wasn't about me. It was about like that process of learning how to take the reins of your self-empowerment, direct yourself wherever you want to be, feel the power and know that you have that power. And then when you have that power, or at least when I had that power, all I wanted to do was like give it to other people. Mm. I wanted to show them that they could do that for themselves. And training was like the way, because, you know, if you could get someone to, you know, overcome that obstacle of their physical form, or it's not an obstacle, the obstacle that's keeping them from presenting their physical form in the way that they want, yeah. All things are powerful, are possible. All things are possible. You know, it's the closest thing to you. Like the body is like right there. You're in it. It's how you view the world. It's like if there's anything that you have the power to change, like that's it. That there's, you know, things outside of our control that we see, that we're aware of, that we really can't like affect very much. All of us have control over our physical form and our bodies.
Yeah. I tell a story on the podcast before, but about 2017, I started lifting weights for the first time, and I started realizing, it wasn't the first time, but it was the first time I took it really seriously. And I just felt like I'm a different human being. Like I saw the reflection of what other people would say, and I felt differently about myself. And I was like, oh my God, like this is a base level requirement for me, for being a human being that is in control of my physical surroundings, like just to take care of my body.
That's it.
And it just gave me so much power that, oh, if I control my food and I control my body, I can do whatever I set my mind to, because the podcast became that.
Yeah.
The podcast was just like, oh, just follow the training plan.
Yeah.
The meditation became just follow the training plan. It's like, it all is the same thing if you can figure out your body. And the body for me was the base level, and it seems like it was for you.
That's
as well.
It. It's what I saw in the clients. That's what I saw in the people every time. They would change their career. They would get out of bad relationships. They would make meaningful changes and tackle the obstacles that were holding them back head on, because they believed in themselves. They had empowered themselves. They had confidence in themselves. It was the best. It is the best. It still continues to be the best. Yeah. Like and that's now the obsession, the goal is like, how do I hand them that torch? How do I like give them that power? How do they like have the fire? How can they get the fire? How can more people get it? Because for the longest time, like I, you know, had to do it in person and just me with them, like as a personal trainer. How do you scale that up so that you can like help more? You know, I could only help a dozen people at a time.
Yeah.
You know, like how do you help hundreds, thousands, millions?
When did it go from model to personal trainer to owning a gym?
So the modeling led to the personal training, which led to the gym. So initially, like I'm just going out and I'm going on auditions and like calls, right? For different modeling jobs. And you get in a rhythm, but then like, you know, it's very inconsistent. Like, so you're not just like going out like 12 hours a day. You have like pockets of time here and there. And my agent also represented this other gym owner named Joe Daldell. He had an amazing gym called Peak Performance in New York. And it was where all these celebrities trained. It was awesome. And he just introduced me, sent me over. He's like, hey, like, he's like, hey, Joe, I got this like young guy. He's in great shape. Like, can he like train with you? And Joe was just like, yeah, sure. Like, he just pawned me off to like the head of training at the time. I had like no certification, or like maybe a photocopied like fake one.
You just had your body.
Yeah.
You're just like, I look good.
I was just like, I'm in shape. Like, is this not good enough? And like, maybe I think I just said like, yeah, I'll get you the certification later. I don't think I had it. They put me on the training floor like that day. I didn't know what to do too. Like, I had I think I came with a whistle and like, like a stopwatch.
Oh my God.
And I'm training these like model girls and having them run stairs and like do front squats and like basically go through like football workouts. And you know, it's cool. If it's good enough, it worked. And like my business partner at the time, you know, he saw me like training, he saw me training myself, and he's like, dude, like, we need to talk. Like,
you're doing this wrong.
You don't really know what you're doing. So, and he was right. Like, I could like work really hard for myself and get away with a lot, but I didn't have skills in training other people and evaluating them and giving them what they needed and setting them up for success. And he really like encouraged me to take continuing education courses, to like get educated, get certified, really know what I'm doing, really like take the training to the next level. And I made a lot of friends in training. Like, they became like my social circles. It became a very empowering place. And then the modeling, when I would go to the jobs, like, you know, it just made me very self-conscious. You're like, you're seeing like 10 other people that look exactly like you. One of them's wearing a leather jacket. You're like, I need a leather jacket. Like, maybe my ears are too big or my eyes are too wrong or like something's not right. My hair's not right. So like, it was less and less fun. And I was starting to make more money training. I was in more demand. People were like giving me a lot of, support there. So it was just leaning more toward that. And then there was a point where I'm like, I'm kind of maxed out in the number of clients that I can serve. And I'm tired because I'm like, you know, training a lot. And I'm thinking like most businesses start, like there's got to be a better way. And thinking like, this personal training thing is like very expensive. This wasn't really like how I learned how to train. This isn't how we trained when I played football in college. Like, they had it set up way more efficient. You know, they still trained us like the way a trainer should and would, but they did it in groups of four. And you signed up for the time that worked for you that day. Everybody followed the same training program, but the GA or like the strength and conditioning coach would like dial in like the weight selection you're using, make sure you're like getting the right cues and like coaching that you needed to perform the various lift. And I was like, this is better. Like, this is better for people. They're not in a one-on-one bubble. They're going to save money. They're going to be part of a community. And it's actually going to like create an environment where there's a level of accountability that there's not in one-on-one. Like if I just put you on a treadmill in a one-on-one session and, you know, the challenge for you is to like run at a 8.0 for 5 minutes. And, you know, you get 4 minutes in and you're just like, ah, I just can't, you're the only one there. And, you know, you have to slow down and I'm your trainer. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you know what, Danny, you did great. Good job, Danny. Like, you know, I want you to come back for the next session. I want you to keep training with me. You're my friend. But like, if there's four people and like everybody's running at an 8.0 and 4 minutes comes along and the three other people are holding and you really don't want to, you probably will.
You find a way.
You probably will.
Yeah. I was thinking about this yesterday on the trails. I'm like, I'm running completely alone. And when I'm running in the race, I'm going to run faster. So sometimes I'll just picture when I'm practicing, I'll just picture people with me, running with me, because I'm like, that actually feels like a more human thing to do.
Yeah. And we knew that group fitness had better energy, right? There were bigger classes, like where you could work out with other people. The problem is like when it's so big, there's no accountability to the performance. You don't know how fast somebody should be going based on what they can do. Everybody, it's still just energy and like you can do it. But like when there's like four people, Everybody sees everybody. Everybody knows exactly what everybody's doing. If one person falls off, everybody knows that one person fell off. It's very clear.
That is interesting.
You know,
the
like
four people specific.
The four was like a big deal.
Wow.
It was a big deal. And you know, I understood why there was no other gyms that like did four people, because it's so hard. You have to set things up right. You're at a tough price point because it's more expensive than group fitness. It's more affordable than personal training, but the personal training crowd feels like they're getting less because there's like a few other people there.
Interesting.
You have to like set it up to where like people can't just do like a single session, because you're going to have a bunch of randoms doing their first session together forever.
Interesting.
Right. You have to like sell it as a program, as a system where they're doing like at least like three times a week for like at least a month, like minimum, rather than like just one session or one drop-in class. But if you could get people to do it, I knew it was going to work. That was the conviction. That's why I have to do this. Like, I know that like if people do this, it will work and it will work better.
So what, you have that conviction or idea and then you go and set up a gym?
Yeah. So we didn't even set up a gym. Like we kind of slowly built the gym next door while we were still training our personal training clients. So we didn't tell our boss. I teamed up with the personal training manager, Dan Trink. He's one of my best friends and my business partner. And we got a lease in a basement that used to be a storage space next door. It was like, you know, $13,000 a month for like 1800 square feet. 'Cause you're right, downtown New York. So it was like not a nice space. It was not very big. We didn't have, my life savings was like 50 grand. Dan's life savings was like 50 grand. I convinced one of my training clients to give us our 100 grand. So we had 200 grand total to get this business up off the ground. Once we spent the equipment and like got the lease signed and like put down the security deposit, there was like no money left. So
that
like
cost 200 grand.
Yeah, man.
Wow.
So like we had to build everything and set everything up ourselves, and we didn't even have it all done. Like we got the floor set up. We got enough equipment that we could like run some classes, but we didn't have like, we didn't have lockers or like a place that people could like hang their coats. Like people were just throwing their stuff on the floor, coming in, working out. Like
we, what year is this?
This was 2015, the end of 2015. Our first session was really 2016 because we were building it all out. Like I remember Christmas Eve, we had, like my hands were like bloodied from like installing the tile for the gym. It was like, you know, work until like midnight Christmas Eve, like just getting it set up because I knew that like after New Year's, people like signed up for gyms. Like that's when people would like join gyms and I didn't have anybody else. It's like, I didn't have any contractors, you know, we didn't have anybody. So we were just working around the clock, getting it set up, doing what we could, watching YouTube videos, making a lot of trips to Home Depot. And we built up something that was workable. You could train somebody in it. And, you know, we started with like 12 people that were, you know, the ones willing from our personal training days to like come over and try this gym. And dude, it worked. Like they became really tight, like really good friends. We were all or nothing. It was like one membership. It was $1,000 a month. You can come every day. Like we had a program 6 days a week. And people got in like sick shape. They made really, really, they formed really close, tight knit bonds with each other. And, they developed themselves with each other. You know, it was awesome to watch. Like I watched people do what I did, you know, in moving to New York, like through this vehicle that like we brought to life. And, that was kind of like watching your kid being born, you know, that was like that everything kind of led to this. Like everything has led me to be able to like put all of my like effort, knowledge, experience, and guts into like something that's going to help other people. And hopefully something that like outlives me, you know, something that's like extended beyond myself.
It's fascinating because you look at the journey from just watching the guy have an iPhone to opening up the gym. And it's just like, oh my God, what different realities. And,
oh, completely.
And how the journey of you opening up the gym and changing people was also just the beginning. That was like 2015, 2016.
Yeah.
And you've lived
that's not that long ago.
I know.
Yeah. That messes with me now.
Why?
It feels like centuries. It just feels like that was so long ago. Like there's been so much that's happened.
Yeah. Well, you were scrolling through your schedule from 2017. And it was so cool to see, like you were putting in work then.
Oh yeah. 2 years. Yeah. After opening, like we were still doing everything, you know, at this point, like I brought on my brother, Jess was one of our trainers, my buddy, Alec. We maybe had like three other trainers other than ourselves that were like friends and family. But that's how we ran it. It was just like a family. We had like no rules. There was no policy. It was not a business at
all. Until when?
COVID. So COVID made it forced the hand of it becoming a business. And like, you know, the period from when we opened to it becoming a business in around 2020, that period was like, that was just the most magical time ever.
Why was it?
Because it was so pure. Like it was, we knew we had nothing except for the success of like the people around us. We were living for our members. Like and to be honest, if it wasn't for COVID, we probably always would have. And I mean, that would have been a very different life than what I'm living now, you know? And it would have had some drawbacks, but it would have still, you know, been, you know, very pure because we didn't know anything about business. The only thing we had, the only control that we thought we had in the whole thing was like, make an amazing place where people get in amazing shape. Like that's everything, right? That was what my whole day was like dedicated towards. And that does not protect you against like economic disaster.
Yeah. So, I mean, that must've been a scary reality. I laughed.
That was a reality. I mean, like, it was the most brutal thing ever. All the gyms had to shut down. Businesses had to shut down. You weren't legally allowed to like train people. You weren't legal. I mean, we didn't want to. We were all terrified. You know, everybody was terrified. Were you in New York at that time?
Yeah.
Like when it first kind of all happened, like, you know, at the time, like nobody knew anything. Like, yeah. I thought it was going to be end of days.
Yeah.
Like it was really scary. And, but once it like, once kind of the first few months of it went by and like all my friends were alive, like fortunately, you know, like, we didn't lose anybody in the gym. It wasn't like, I thought like half the population was going to be decimated, you yeah. know, like it, once it wasn't that, and then it was like slowly like coming out of it and slowly realizing like, okay, like we have a business that we have to like figure out what it's going to do and how it's going to work. And, you know, we have these employees that are my brother and my friends and my, Jess was my girlfriend, you know, at this time. And, you know, what are we going to do? We actually signed up with Alex Ramosi's company, Gym Launch, and, you know, basically gave him like our last $16,000 like left in our bank account. Cause we knew that we didn't have any customers, and like, we believed him and we believed his company would be able to deliver us more than the value, more than the cost of like his licensing program. So, which is basically, it was really just an educational program on how to market and sell gyms for gyms. And Dan and I threw ourselves like totally in that. And that's when it became a business. That was like, Dan and I had to learn marketing and sales, which was like not what I wanted to do. This kind of felt like going, this is what I was getting away from, right? The corporate world, like having to sell things. Like I didn't want to sell anything to anybody like up until that point. I just want to have an awesome gym that people were like banging down the door and I could be like, yeah, okay, you're cool. You can come in. To like completely flipping the script to where like I'm begging people to like give me money for this product. It's a completely different frame.
Yeah.
You know, so that's when it became a business. And, you know, in that process of becoming a business and like us, you know, like not being able to pay rent, like not having, you know, any customers, like I lost my brother from the, you know, not like in life, but I lost him from the business. And, you know, we had to lay off, but basically it wasn't, we didn't even lay anybody off. We didn't have any money to pay our, like our people, you know? So it was just, nothing was there. I couldn't like make them come in and like work for free. And, you know, I just had to, we had like the worst day, the worst talk where it was just like bank accounts empty and like we don't have any customers, we don't have any ways to pay you anymore. And we kept them on through COVID remotely, but like we were learning marketing and sales from Gym Launch, but we weren't legally allowed to be open yet, so like we couldn't really like market people into the gym. And it was just like the worst days. And then we were back to square one. It was just me and Dan. And like, we had to rebuild everything 5 years later in a way that could weather a storm like that.
It's so interesting that the heaviness with which you're speaking now, it's like you had built up such a system and such a way of being that was so enjoyable, and you lost that, and also lost the feeling of control. And like, what about it is so heavy to you?
It was kind of like it was the end of Neverland. You know, there's a part of the story And it was like that beautiful part, that beautiful 5 years where like money doesn't matter. Nothing matters except friends, family, fitness, love, like this place. We never need to grow. We never need to have a sign. We never need to like do anything except for like the magic that we're doing in this gym. And like all the while, right? Like you saw my schedule. It's like wake up at 4:30, like walk to gym at 5, train people from 5 until 10, from 10 to 10:30 fold towels, from like 10:30 to noon train people, from like noon to 12:30 meditate, from 12:30 to 2 like work out yourself, from 2 to 2:30 eat, like 2:30 to 3 take out my dogs, 3 train till 8:30, like and it didn't end until 11. Yeah. You know, I'm just like every day was like that. Every day was just like, it wasn't healthy, right? Like, I mean, my physical body like was definitely like taking a toll from that, but it was all like in service of this like dream that we're all like in this protected place where like nothing in the outside world matters and it's all gonna be fine, like as long as we're all like down here. And, but it wasn't being real with like the threats of the world. Like the world doesn't care. Like Neverland. Yeah. Like it's not real. Like that's not the real world. Like that served us because it allowed us to create a magical thing. I still think our business, The Fort's like a magical gym. Well, there's magic in it. You know, it's not the same magic that we had when we were just like those, you know, 5 trainers in that little protective bubble, but there's magic in what we do. Like we still deliver those, like the principles that we like, that we discovered in that space, like to this day with 26 trainers and like 4 gyms and 500 members. And it's still the magic is still there.
What is the magic exactly?
I think the magic is creating this like curated environment where we strategically put people in positions where they're supported by others, but they're in a spot where they really, really, really don't want to do something. You know, be that like lift a particular weight in a particular way, row a certain distance at a particular pace, you know, move a particular way under a particular timing into a particular range of motion. I don't care who you are, but every single session, every single day for every single person that comes to the Fort, everyone has a moment where they're like, I truly do not want to do this one thing. And that one thing could be different for different people. But because they're surrounded with other people that know them and see them, the coaches included, like these are 4-person groups, right? Like each gym's like 100, 150 people. Like there's no hiding. Everyone knows you. They know where you're from. They know your kids' names. Like they are rooting for you. They know your toughness. They've seen it before. They've seen things that you've done. So like when you're put in that position and you have that love and you have that support and you do it, you do the thing that you wouldn't do. And then you get to the other side and you realize your power. You realize your power was actually more than you thought your power was. Mm. And you do that as a practice. You commit yourself to that practice and you never stop. And there's magic in that. Cause you never like then, you know, it tear up a little thinking about it. Like Neverland never has to die that way. You can always grow. You're always that kid growing into the person you want to be. If you can find a way to put yourself in that spot with those in that environment. It's awesome, man. I mean, it's the challenge. Like, how do you give the world that?
Yeah.
You know, we all need that.
Yeah.
Encouragement, you know,
It's your reason for being.
That's it. Yeah.
And you, it's like you almost created that in the space of the 5 years that you're calling Neverland. And like now you're able to use the blueprints.
Yeah.
To help people widely.
Yeah. If we, you know, I mentioned this to you the other day and you said this, you know, I said like, sometimes I regret not just like going for 10 gyms, just not just opening 10 gyms. Right.
And when you talk about it right now, you're like, thank God we didn't open 10 gyms immediately. Like you're like so excited. The very fact that you had 5 years of that beautiful experience.
You'd have no magic at 10 gyms.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, you might have a very well-oiled machine that operates exactly the way that it's drawn up, but you wouldn't have any of that magic.
Yeah. So what happened with Hormozy? You got this program, $16,000 down.
Yeah. I mean,
did it work?
It worked.
Wow.
Holy hell. That guy. I learned a lot about Hormozy. It's been very cool watching him become Hormozy. I remember when he was just like, he became Mosey or Mosey Nation. And like, I'm like, wow. Like when we started working with Hormozy, like he had a ponytail and a like handlebar mustache. Yep. And Dan and I absorbed everything that he put out. Like he did tons of podcasts. At that time, he was really active in the Facebook group. So like he would go live on the Facebook group like every day. He would get on during COVID. He got on for an hour every single day with like everyone who's part of a gym or part of Gym Launch and would just answer questions like to the community.
Wow.
He would answer any question like to your face if you were willing to like log on to the Zoom and like ask it to him every day.
Wow.
He hustled. That guy like went all in. When COVID happened, like anybody in that industry, like I'm, you know, not just a gym, but like I'm a B2B of gyms. Like, dude, he'd be like, it's over. Hormozy like went all in. It was amazing to watch. And learned a lot about him. Like he put together a fantastic program that as soon as you sign up, he like got, he set up your Facebook account. They got ads like into the account, like set up all the thresholds, set up all the creative, like all of the landing pages. They did like everything because those are all blocks that would keep people from like moving forward and like actually like marketing their business. So you just set it up for you. You hated all of it. You're like, all of this creative sucks. None of this represents us well, but like he knew it was going to work. And he's like, you need like, if you're signing up for this, if you're paying $16,000 for this right now, like you need this to work. And he was right. Like you need it to work. So you do it. He gives you a sales script. He set it up so that like, you know, when somebody signs up, it pings your phone, you give them a call and you say the words on the sheet. And at first, like you hate what you're saying. You don't like it at all, but you just follow the script. You do what he says.
You did this?
Oh yeah. Reluctantly.
I can't imagine you.
He's just huffing and puffing. Hormozy back then, like everything was just like, just do whatever.
You didn't want to do it, but you knew you need that.
Didn't have a choice and we paid too much money. That was like a really big lesson of like, the goal isn't to charge as little as possible for your thing. The goal is to charge as much as possible for your thing. Mm. And the reason being is like, you will deliver a better thing if that thing is more expensive, particularly if it's a service.
And people will take it more seriously.
They have to do it. If somebody spends like, you know, if somebody buys $1,000 a month gym membership, they're going to feel a lot worse about not using that membership than the $10 a month gym membership.
Sure.
You're not serving anybody with that $10 a month gym membership. You're not helping them. What you're ultimately giving them is you're pricing it right at the point where like they're okay with being unhappy with their health and fitness. You're taxing them,
yeah.
But you're not like pushing them. You're not forcing their hand to like come in. If you charge a certain price, you will force someone to have to participate with your product.
Yeah.
And you're going to be able to get way better support, way better. You're going to be able to create a better product. You're going to be able to get better spaces. You're going to be able to hire better coaches, get better equipment, like put more effort into R&D, like really create something great. And Hermosi gave us all the tools so that once we reopened after COVID, we crushed.
Wow.
And we opened 3 more gyms in, I guess, 3 years.
Wow.
I guess it's been 3 years.
So you had the one gym and then one gym for 5. The
original gym. Yeah.
It goes to 0. You have to lay people off.
Yeah. Kind of a reorganization of everything. Yeah.
And then in the next 3 years, you've gone from.
Yeah. Just it was like being able to really like start over, but with the same brand, the same space, but like really truly like, okay, knowing what we know now, which is we know marketing and sales, we know that like bad stuff is going to happen that you can't prepare for, and that you have to have a solid business to be able to weather that storm, or else you're going to get taken out and you won't be able to continue doing what you love. You have to like build this up. You have to make this bigger. You have to make this stronger. You have to make it profitable. You have to like make it successful, or else it will get wiped out and you won't be able to do what you love. So that was like the initiative. And we did. We grew it up. We got it. You know, we're still doing that. We're still growing it up. We're still pushing it out. We're still reaching out to more people, looking at more spaces, trying to scale the empowerment to the human population.
What do you think were some of the core attributes of who you are that has allowed you to go from this path of white collar with ties to living a life that you're excited about and helping people? What's the attributes that have allowed that to occur?
Oh, it's being able to do what you don't want to do. Mm. I think that's what it boils down to everybody. And I think that's why football served me so well. And I'm so glad that those years of, you know, from like 12 to 24 were like so dedicated to something so hard.
Yeah.
I never liked getting slammed, like running full speed into another human being. I did not like 2-3-a-day practices in like wet, gross, like, uniforms that like had been sitting out in like in the locker room for hours beforehand, and like getting, you know, no sleep, waking up early for coaches just to scream at you and tell you you're doing everything wrong. And I mean, it's brutal hard, you know, like you don't want to do any of it. But you build up this muscle of saying yes to doing hard things.
Yeah. And then how do you know when it's not for you? Cause like you can make the argument that you're like, I'm just going to do the hard thing.
Yeah.
For law. I'm going to do the hard thing for banking.
Yeah.
So like, how do you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I saw people do that in the law, and it served them, and it was right. That was right for them. Like they were able to like see it through. You have to like believe in where you're going. I think I did see in the law thing, like a vision of like what I thought my life would be like when I was 40, and I was overweight, in a bad relationship, maybe like divorced, maybe like remarried, like pretty unhappy, doing the same thing at work, wearing the same clothes at work, slowly like just sliding into like worse of a depression. The path that I saw and what I told myself wasn't good. The other path was Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Like that was a convincing future.
That was exciting.
That was a compelling future.
Yeah.
I think you have to have that part. Like, if you're just doing like hard things that you don't want to do, and there's no compelling value for what the future of that is going to deliver to you, like it's probably not going to work. You're probably you're not going to be able to keep that up.
Yeah. It's doing hard things with the compelling.
There has to be a compelling vision of the future that comes with it.
Yeah. That's a really good nuance there. And then,
but doing the hard things, that is like, that's everything.
Yeah.
Everybody has that like at their disposal right now. It's not just hard things. I'm trying to train myself out of saying hard things, doing things you don't want to do.
Yeah.
It's different than hard things.
What's the difference?
So you can train yourself up to do hard things and actually like doing hard things.
Mm.
You can get in the cold plunge enough that like you look forward to the cold plunge.
Yes.
It's still hard. Like even when you get in, like after you've been doing it for a long time, it's still hard, right? It still takes your breath, but like you like what it does for you, you know, like, and that is the difference between the fort, like what we do in the gym versus what everybody else does in the gym. It's like, we put you in that place. Like that was the magic. You will not want to do this. Like I go to Lifetime. I love it. I love Lifetime. Whatever I do there is great. Whatever I do, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
Love every bit of it. I've trained myself up to like, to that point. And I can do like most things and I enjoy it. You know, when I go back to New York and I do a training session at the gym and our coaches are like watching me front squat and we're going like every 2 minutes for like 7 rounds. And like, we're, you know, at like, we're doing 5 reps at like 82%. That is an uncomfortable protocol, man. That sucks. And like, they know what my 82% is.
Yes.
And they would know if I took like 5 kilos off the bar, which would really help. Right. And like, you know, they're watching it and you know, the other people are watching it too. And what do you do instead? You like put an extra 5 kilos on.
Right. How does somebody create that if they don't have that in their day? They're listening to this podcast right now.
Start a business that does it. I don't know. That's tough, right? Because yeah. Like, I didn't have that. I think I never would have wanted to start the fort if somebody else was doing it.
Interesting.
If it existed, I don't think I would have, because it was a lot of work. I think I was ultimately like looking to join a gym that was doing that. Like I wanted what I had when I played football. Because I knew there was magic there. I knew what that did for me. I knew what that could do for people. But it was selfish at first. It was like, I want that gym. Like, I just want that gym. Well, that gym was nowhere to be found.
You solved your own problem.
Yeah. And like, I think it's a, you know, what was your first question? If people don't have that, how do they create that?
Yeah.
It's a great way to reason to start a business.
Yeah.
Is, you know, like, figure out how to create an environment or curate or cultivate an environment where that happens, where you help people do that.
Yeah.
So, I think that's what coaching is, right? Like,
yes.
Like that is coaching at the core. Like coaching.
Yes.
Coaching isn't coaching if it's stuff people want to do.
Yes. We're going to a place you don't want to go to that you wouldn't go on your own. So we'll go there together. And I'll hold your hand there and look you in the eyes and tell you, it'll be okay. We'll get through this. And not only will it be okay, we'll be in a better place by virtue of us doing this thing
that we didn't want to. This is the only way you're going to get there. This was Hormozi.
Yes.
Saying like, this is the only way that you are going to like turn this into a business.
And you're like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do
nothing about, I didn't want to do any of it, but I wanted to have a business. I had to. I didn't want to lose it, man. Like, you know, that I was willing to do whatever it took to get to that place where like we had a business that wasn't going to get taken out, you know?
Yeah.
And like, that's what coaching does. That's what coaching is. That's what AI will never do.
Mm,
we don't this care.
Great conversation about AI at the gym when ChatGPT came out and we're talking to a trainer and he's freaking out about it. And we're like, you're good.
And it's not the program.
Yeah. Why will AI not take out coaching?
Because they're not people. That accountability, that like being seen factor, that applies to another person. When we're seen by an algorithm or we're seen by a program, it might be the most knowing, intelligent program way beyond anything a human could ever know or be aware of, but it doesn't know how to be a person. It wasn't born and have to work through the challenges of like being a limited human being in a limited form with our limited skills. And all we have is each other and this place. So like, we can't rely on an AI, or we don't want to rely on AI. We don't get the value that we get being seen by our peers and other people that know what it's like to be people. And I do think AI is going to like change the world, like in major ways. But I think what we're going to see is the value of coaching and people and being seen by other people and being held accountable by other people, encouraged by other people. Those products, those services are going to become the whole economy. Like the products, like this AI is going to figure out how to make this microphone a fraction of a penny.
It already has.
Yeah, right. Like it's going to do that for all the products in the world. We're going to have absolute abundance when it comes to like things. What we'll have scarce and limited resources of is each other's attention.
Yeah. And this is actually what I wanted to bring up to you, because I admire you so much from a business perspective, from a physical fitness perspective. But I think what I admire most about you is your ability to be present and to see other people. And where does that skill come from for you?
That's a good question, man. I don't know. I know that it's always served me. I know that like, I think it's always been in me to connect with other people. And I think my dad did an amazing job connecting with other people. He is the most smiley, happy, friendly, easy to be buddies with guy. And I watched him and I knew that was a good strategy for life, you know? Like,
it's like there's going to be people with you wherever you go for the rest of your life. It's like a guarantee.
There's going to be people.
How come people aren't trying to master the skill to the best of their abilities at all times?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it is like the thing, like anything you want to do, anything you want to create, anything you want to become, you are not going to do it on your own. Like it is going to require partners. It's going to require customers, subscribers, or, you know, people. Like it's all going to require people. Like the number one skill set, like I think that's going to apply to everyone, is being able to connect with other people. Just, and like you said, it doesn't require a lot of skill. It requires you to be present with them. Mm-hmm. If you're just a person with them in the moment, the connection is inevitable. Because we're both people, holy hell, in this moment.
I know.
Like, can you believe this? I know. That like, you're another person.
I know.
And I'm another person.
I know.
And we're in this moment together.
I know. I know. And I think it first requires you to be present with yourself. Because the people who have the most difficulty connecting with other people are the people who haven't connected with themselves.
Oh, how could you connect with somebody else if you can't connect with yourself?
Can't.
You can't. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, with that, I'm curious, what is like presence to you? Like, what do you think's going on there? Like in this moment, cause you spend a lot of time, and we talked about this before the podcast, I've not been meditating in a long time, but in meditating, you follow, a system of experiencing presence with some guidelines and like some intent there. What are we getting at, you know, in presence? Like, what are you approaching when you meditate in the moment?
I think it's God. I think it's the thing connecting all of us. Because somebody meditates for 10 years, they inherently are more connected to every person that they speak with. And every person that they speak with is themselves.
Do you differentiate God, truth, love?
all the same.
Yeah.
It's all the same.
Like those three words come to mind to me as well whenever I think of presence.
Yes.
All those things.
Yes.
And it's like it's undeniable. It's all everything. And it is loving. Like it is love. Like I feel love with everything, everyone in that place.
Yeah. The question that I'm grappling with trying to understand right now is like, is God something in us as well as outside of us? Like, is God the circumstances that unfold perfectly just the way they are? Is God,
But I think it's okay for God to be a mystery.
Yeah.
I think that's the point.
Yeah.
I think it's part of the point of why things are the way they are and why we don't know. I think if God was a thing that would like work that way and like wanted us to know, like he would, or they would, or it would, like it would be more clear to us all in some way. But like, I think that's like kind of built into like the point is like that it's that mystery that is what it is, what God is, what truth is, what love is.
Yeah.
But it is at the core, like kind of the only thing that is. And it like connects us all and we're a part of it. And it seems to be like forgiving and loving, and there's no denying it. You know, it is like what this is.
Was there ever a time when you didn't know God or believe in God?
Oh man, we're gonna go back to the beginning now.
I love it.
I don't know. I won't overdo it. I'll see how fast I could get through it. So I was born Mormon, was Mormon till I was 15. Dad got into an argument over football with the bishop of the local Mormon church. So then we stopped going to Mormon church.
Wow.
You know, kind of didn't do anything. My mom went back to the Catholic church. My dad still says he's Mormon. You know, I think he still goes to Mormon church sometimes. Never really found another church that like I liked. When I was Mormon, I really was suspicious that like, I was like, I don't, this all seems like kind of kooky. So I was like, kind of like suspicious as a kid that like, nobody really knew what they were talking about. And then like when we left, and then as I got older, I was like atheist all the way, like for sure. Sam Harris is right. There's nothing after you die. There's nothing. There's nothing.
No thing.
Yeah. There's no thing. And then like did that for like a while. I think like really, you know, that was just a stage that you kind of like, you have to go through that really disconnects you with religion.
I think
there's some merit to like cut the cord, evaluate everything on your own. And then I think you'll end up like circling back to some things, but you'll probably have like a more useful perspective. Did a bunch of psychedelics, had a lot of experiences there, did a lot of like work on myself, did a lot of like curious investigation, trying to figure things out. And now I've like kind of really come back full circle and kind of look at things in a much more religious light, like really like appreciating the scriptures, like word for word, appreciating a God and not like what we're talking about, like in that moment and like truth, God, love, like, I think even something, that sits outside of that, even like, then it extends like in a more traditional sense, like a architect of all of it,
right? Another entity outside of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, something, and particularly something outside of yourself. You know, I think I went down the path of like, I'm God, I'm part of God, so I'm God. Like, there's no difference between me. We're all God. Like, right. It's all God.
And like, that can be true and.
That can be true and, right. But I think it is, I think that can lead to some not great, like, experiences, feelings. And I don't think it's true. Like, I don't think that's like, that's truth, you know? I think you fall into like kind of the, some prideful traps, and it can be really lonely. And, you find yourself in a place where you're like not serving anymore.
How do you figure that out?
The more I like felt that like I am God, and this was, you know, this is when I listened to a lot of Alan Watts. I really liked Alan Watts, and this was kind of like his philosophy. It was like, you are it. Like, you are part of the universe. You are creating this universe. You're doing it all without even knowing it. Everything is fine. You're going to be fine. You can't do any wrong. Whatever you do is exactly perfectly right. And like, Alan Watts died an alcoholic, like a pretty unhappy way, and kind of saying like, well, I like it better when I'm drinking, right? Like, I like life better drunk. And that's a bummer.
Is that truth? Is drinking alcohol truth?
Yeah. Well, like, it's true. You're right. It's true that that was part of Alan Watts' story, right? Like, that's like how it ended. But I think like the thing there, the trap is the pride trap of like, it doesn't matter. You are the end all be all. And that doesn't sit with me. That doesn't track. That doesn't match up. Like, the what I feel, what I've experienced, what I see in my job, what I see in my career, what I feel when I'm connecting with other people is that I'm serving.
Yeah.
I am serving. And I'm not serving myself.
Yeah.
So what am I serving? And that is something beyond me. That is something bigger. That is not me. Like, that is what I pray to. That is what I think God is this is all in service of this.
And can it be true that you at the deepest level, like, we are the same and we are one, and also like, we're not.
Yeah. Well, like, I mean,
we're
all God's children, right? Like, we're all part of God. Like, we're all I think it's just because like something, you're serving something, doesn't mean that you're not still part of it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah, you could look at I love this analogy. Like, you look at every like microorganism that makes you up, like every bacterial cell, every cell, every like fungi, every like, there's a lot of things that make up Danny. And like, you could take, you know, any one of them out and Danny's still going to be Danny. And like, any one of those things could die. And like, that thing would just kind of become Danny. Like, you'd still be part of Danny. It's like refreshing itself, it's reintroducing itself, it's rebirthing itself. But Danny is just the combination of all those things. Yeah. Like, if you took all of those things and like spread them all apart to all different like parts of the universe, like, it wouldn't still be Danny, but all those things would still be there, and it would still be here, and it would still be all part of it. Right. So like, I think you can be part of the thing, right? And not necessarily be the whole thing, you know, not be like both. There can be something in that you're serving and still be part of that thing without like being the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I'm really grateful for you for like, go into these places and just you have such a thirst for knowledge, like a genuine thirst for, I want to know.
Oh, it's my favorite.
I know.
Yeah.
And it's like masked in this gym version of fitness and business. And
well, it's just the fitness thing. Yeah. Like you, I know I like really encapsulate the gym bro look. But the fitness thing is like the most spiritual thing that I've come to realize that I could do for myself. Cause that is the thing. That's the thing that's the closest to you. It's the thing where you can tap into your spiritual self. Like you can tap into your power and your place in the universe. You can like give yourself the tools. You can give yourself the gas and the momentum and the capabilities. And like, you can work on it forever. And you can see what you're capable of. So it's like that, yeah, if we're going to be here and we're going to do something, like this is what I want to do. Like this is how I like serve spiritually. Like this is the move.
And also the very fact that you've built your body and now you're serving people by helping other people build their bodies. That's like,
it's
doing
awesome.
God's work.
Yeah.
That's a spiritual pursuit.
Yeah. You get to feel great. It all made sense to me. Like this is what I wanted to be. This is what I wanted to do. And that, like going back to that thing, like I didn't feel good. Like I didn't like how I felt. I didn't like where it was going. I didn't know any other options were out there, but like it is possible for you to love where you're at. Love where you're going, feel spiritually aligned with like how you spend your energy and efforts, attract and encourage like other people that are on like a similar path and a similar mindset. Like you can feel fulfillment. Like fulfillment is possible. You don't have to feel like you do. And it doesn't, that was not very long ago for me. That was like, you know, like we're talking about that was 2015. Well, no, that was 2010 when I like really like, you know, cut off the tie and like went, and then it was 2015, like when we opened the gyms and like, you can do amazing things in a very short period of time. I am very excited to think what that next thing might be for you and for me and for anyone out there that's like trying to do anything. Like that to me, that's the reason like I love connecting with people is like I get to hear where they're going, what they're working on, how they're expressing this amazing opportunity that we all have in this world, in this life together.
Kyle Fields, you're an absolute gem of a human being.
I love you, brother.
I love you too. I'm so grateful for that we got the chance to record and publish one of these episodes that we've recorded. We've done so many of these times.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really such a pleasure.
Absolutely,
such an honor.
Man.
Where should we send people to connect with you?
Oh, go come watch our gym's Instagram, watch our gym's YouTube. It's the Fort NYC on Instagram and the Fort NYC on YouTube. But come check out what we're doing. Subscribe, like, love us, shoot us a comment. We would love to have you in the community.
Such a brilliant, brilliant guy. Thank you so much. Linked all down below. I'm really grateful to be your friend and to just be able to witness the joy and love and light that you bring into the world, because it's such a special thing to witness. So keep doing it, brother.
Oh man, I can't wait till we do it again and we hash out all the cool stuff that's happened from now to then.
Yeah.
It's
going to be fun.
All right, bro.
Love you.
Love you too, man.
Peace.
See you.